This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, it's been so heartbreaking to watch the great expanse of devastation that has been wrought by Hurricane Harvey, which is being called a storm of historic proportions. The storm has displaced tens of thousands of residents. 14 of the area's hospitals had to be fully or partially evacuated.
Well, Mark, our thoughts, our prayers, and really our attention goes out to all of those who are being impacted by this disaster. Watching both the disaster and just the tremendous acts of bravery and heroism and generosity, which always remind us of the resilience of the human spirit, the goodness of people. At the height of the storm, first responders, everyday citizens pitching in, wading in to rescue stranded residents, and clinicians from the area's health centers and medical clinics are slogging through floodwaters on foot to get to their clinics and their healthcare facilities to try and offer their vitally needed health services.
Many people fled to shelters with nothing more than the clothes on their back, leaving behind vital medications. Meanwhile, impromptu clinics have been set up at the convention center and other areas where large groups of people are sheltering.
I understand some pharmacy shops and chains have set up shop within the large shelters to make sure that displaced residents can gain access to their medications. And it's important to remind people who want to help out in this crisis that there are good and reputable charities to donate to. The American Red Cross, of course, right there with first responders on the ground. And our Connecticut-based charities, AmeriCares and Save the Children, also on the front lines. And Mark's, not that long ago, we had Save the Children CEO Carolyn Miles on with us recently talking about American children in crisis. This is certainly one of those times, and I know that they have deployed staff and services to the area.
There will be a long-term impacts in public health with so many dwellings having been flooded, and there will be lingering mental health effects as well as people processing the trauma and the devastation of this life-changing storm.
Clinicians around the country are starting to offer their services to help meet the great need across the affected areas, certainly in physical health, but also in behavioral health and trauma follow-up. It is going to take a huge coordinated effort to help restore normalcy to the lives of all those affected by Hurricane Harvey.
Our guest today is CEO of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Michael Considine is joining us to talk about the challenges insurance commissioners are facing, especially in the health insurance arena.
And Lori Robertson will stop by, the managing editor of factcheck.org. She is always on the hunt for misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain. And you can hear all of our shows by going to chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you.
We'll get to our interview with Mike Considine in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. The devastating floods wrought by Hurricane Harvey continue to impact residents of South and Central Texas. It's impacting healthcare in a significant way. The renowned MD Anderson Cancer Center had to shut down operations for several days at their main facility as well as several satellites due to the extensive flooding. MD Anderson has upgraded its flood preparedness standards after being impacted by Hurricane Allison in 2001, installing floodgates and also moving electrical equipment off the lower levels. A total of 14 regional hospitals were impacted with some kind of evacuation. Many local clinics impacted by the flood remained open, however, doctors slogging through, in some cases, miles of water to get to the clinics just to make sure they were there. There were some lessons learned from the extreme devastation wrought by Hurricane Katrina in neighboring Louisiana. That storm flooded all of the region's hospitals, stranding many of the sickest and most vulnerable patients. Another significant loss at the time was millions of paper health records. Since then, there's been a massive shift of America's health records to electronic platforms. State of Texas urging everyone to make sure they're up to date on tetanus shots. Many people also may be without their prescriptions, having fled their homes with just the clothes on their backs. State health officials also warn that once the water recedes, mold could pose a serious health risk to the region. Several potential class action suits have been swiftly filed against insurance giant Aetna after it was revealed the HIV status of some 12,000 customers was compromised when letters were sent to their addresses clearly showing the words "information on your HIV medications." And the mailings were sent out using envelopes with large transparent windows. The company apologized for the breach and said it was undertaking a full review of their processes. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Michael Considine, CEO of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Previously, he served as Insurance Commissioner for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania from 2011 through 2015. While Commissioner, he served as Vice President of the NAIC. Mr. Considine has served as the Global Head of Government and Policy Affairs at Aegon, one of the world's largest financial service companies, and as Senior Vice President and Executive Director of Government Affairs at Transamerican. He earned his law degree from Widener University. Mike, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks for having me.
You know, first of all, while our focus on this show is healthcare, we'd like just to take a moment to acknowledge the terrible devastation being wrought across Texas and Louisiana in the wake of Hurricane Harvey and left enormous damage in its wake. And just a fraction of the region's residents, about 15%, carry flood insurance. And NAIC has gone on record urging the immediate reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program. Mike, can you tell our listeners what your organization believes needs to be done immediately, as well as the long term?
Sure, Mark. Certainly, you know, our hearts and our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to those folks affected by Harvey. And we have not seen a disaster on this scale for almost 12 years. You know, it is a somber reminder of the importance of the NFIP program. This is going to be primarily a flooding event for a lot of those in the affected states. And the NFIP program really is the only program for flood coverage that we have in this country. And it has been a program long in turmoil, and one that we have been vocally advocating needs to be reauthorized first and foremost for an extended period of time, that so you can have some stability in that marketplace, as well as the ability for the private sector to get better and more engaged in supplementing that federal program. It's something that Congress is going to have to tackle as soon as they return here to Washington. And I think Harvey will reinforce the need for reauthorization of these programs, because without it, people will be hard-pressed to rebuild and recover from events like these, which, you know, this is not an isolated event. And this program, if Congress doesn't act, is set to expire in September. So immediate action is needed.
So, you know, in health policy, as in many areas, we seem to be a nation in flux. And I can only imagine what a tumultuous time it is for the nation's insurance commissioners, who are the chief regulators for the nation's insurance markets. You've been through very interesting and changing times, certainly as insurance commissioner in Pennsylvania during the launch of the Affordable Care Act. And now we watch as the president and Congress really make some attempts to create a new approach. So as this next round of health reform unfolds, how is the present uncertainty about the path that we're going to take on reform affecting the work that they are needing to do?
You're absolutely right, Margaret. It has been certainly a very tumultuous time for our state insurance regulators. I think they feel probably like they've been in crisis management mode for the better part of this year. We've had many states, as you know, that have seen individual carriers pulling out of their individual marketplace. For a while, you know, we were looking at situations where we didn't have coverage in some areas of some states. And in many cases, we are still down to just having one carrier in all or parts of a number of states. It has been the story of resiliency, really, and the efforts of state regulators in using all means at their disposal. And I think it feels like sometimes duct tape and chicken wire to keep their markets together, but they've been successful in doing that. And we've seen state regulators across the board bring their states back from the brink where they had zero coverage scenarios. And thankfully, we're not facing that immediate situation, but we're still really on the edge of that crisis. We have a lot of states that are experiencing significant rate increases. We've seen some states' rate request increases in excess of 30%, but some others that, you know, it's still fairly modest rate increases. But all of our members and all of our states are being impacted by this environment of political uncertainty, which causes operational uncertainty and financial uncertainty. And unless and until that is addressed, we're not going to be able to make informed choices, both as state insurance regulators or these companies are, in terms of their short-term, let alone long-term commitment to these markets.
You know, Mike, one of the uncertainties clearly is the cost-sharing subsidy put in place by the Affordable Care Act and whether or not that will continue for the millions of Americans who come to rely on it and to offset the out-of-pocket expenses from co-pays and high deductibles. And NAIC has sent an appeal to leaders in Congress to really give a clear signal for what lies ahead. And I'm sure, tell us how insurance commissioners are working with Congress and the administration to resolve these uncertainty. And do you have a crystal ball? Can you tell us what do you think might be happening out there?
Well, I wish I did have a crystal ball, Mark. So I don't know if I can tell you what will happen, but I can certainly tell you what our members say should be happening in Washington. Our state regulators span the gamut politically, geographically, but our message to Congress has been remarkably clear and consistent, you know, at least with respect to the cost-sharing CSR reduction payments is, you know, they have to be made through at least 2019 to provide that near-term stability to the marketplace, to relieve some of the cost that will otherwise be borne by consumers, the $15 billion per year, to help spread the risk that's currently in the individual market. You know, and just these couple actions will help bring some of that certainty and stability back to a market that desperately needs it. You know, with stability, we hope comes increased competition, which will at that point really start to benefit consumers. We have been consistent and clear in sending that message to Congress. We will have five of our commissioners testifying before the Senate Help Committee on September 6th. So we'll continue to urge the Senate in particular to include these critical stability measures and their debate. And at the same time, we continue to engage with both the White House and HHS on the same message. And HHS has been, I think, very responsive early on to some of the regulatory reforms that we thought they could take to help increase some of that stability. And we hope that cooperation and coordination continues.
But, you know, it seems to us that the large insurance carriers in particular are citing the uncertainty as a primary reason they chose not to participate in the insurance exchange marketplaces. Aetna, United Healthcare, and some others have said they can't effectively calculate the cost-benefit algorithms for the marketplace that didn't attract as many healthy young participants as expected. So talk with us a little bit about what can be done long-term to entice carriers back into markets across the country.
Yeah, and certainly I have a ton of empathy for your listeners and consumers who are experiencing, in many cases, some significant rate shock when it comes to their health insurance premiums in the individual market for next year. But the process for, you know, that health insurers or any insurer for that matter is built on, you know, making assumptions. And, you know, in the case of health insurance, those assumptions were baked into big parts of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, having the CSR component was a major component of their rate assumptions. And right now, as I mentioned, we don't have an answer to whether or not those payments are going to be made. So they're going to have to build that into the process, which is why you're seeing these spikes in a number of rates right now. So clearing up that ambiguity in the marketplace will be certainly one way to get carriers to remain or come back into the market. Once a carrier leaves the market, at least under the current ACA, they can't return for 5 years. So they're essentially out in a regulatory Siberia for that period of time. You know, that restriction was well-meaning when it was probably initially put in place, so you don't have carriers coming in and out and gaming the system. But, you know, a number are now leaving for, you know, what I would suggest are pretty legitimate financial reasons, but may want to return if the market does turn around and if Congress does provide some clarity here. So we'll have to work on that. And also, we have just the efforts of state regulators who are working tirelessly to keep carriers in the market. And, you know, each insurance commissioner has the ability to know what really those companies need to stay in their individual markets. But, you know, really the bottom line is stability. They just, insurance commissioners and consumers all need to know that this law is going to continue to be there in a meaningful, stable way. And as soon as we have that signal from Washington, I think you'll see improvements in the marketplace.
We're speaking today with Michael Considine, CEO of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners and former Pennsylvania Insurance Commissioner. Mike, the rollout of the ACA did experience some challenges. In addition to that initial rocky launch, another big challenge was the patchwork quilt of approaches adopted by different states across the country. And we often talk about states being incubators for healthcare innovation. I wonder if you could share with our listeners the pros and cons of state-based approach to insurance regulation.
Yeah, Mark. We often hear sort of that characterization of our state-based system here in the U.S. as a patchwork. And in some respects it is, but I don't necessarily see that as a negative here because, as you noted, that gives individual states the ability to be sort of laboratories of innovation and entrepreneurship. And we've seen that play out with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. You know, the ACA built in the ability for states to be flexible in terms of whether or not they built their own exchanges, for example. So that level of customization, we don't see as a bad thing. In fact, maximizing state flexibility has been one of our messages to Congress as they go about looking at changes or enhancements that could be made to the Affordable Care Act going forward. Every one of our state markets is different. California is different than Tennessee mm-hmm. in terms of its population, in terms of its health provider infrastructure. And sometimes even within the state, there are big differences. But recognizing that and building in the ability to give states the flexibility, I think will only ultimately be to consumers' benefits, especially in the area of consumer protection, mm-hmm. which our state commissioners feel very strongly mm-hmm. about. You know, having a state regulator who is there in the marketplace, who knows the neighborhood, for lack of a better word. I mean, our regulators are essentially, you know, the beat cops of the insurance marketplace, and they do a much better job of protecting, you know, in their neighborhoods than I would suggest having a federal entity doing so.
Well, Mike, we've been talking about the inherent complexities of the American health insurance market. Certainly, there's been some disruption, not just by shifting government policies, but also by rapid technologic advances as well, which always brings with it both opportunity and risk. I remember my grandfather walking around his beat, you know, collecting the insurance premiums. He was an insurance agent. Those days are long gone, and technology has really moved the industry way forward. Your recent International Insurance Forum touched on some of these emerging technologies and growing consumer demand, and you address some of the significant security risks at play here as well. How's the NAIC addressing all of these emerging technologies along with the emergent data security challenges?
Well, Margaret, technology developments, what we're seeing in the area of innovation, just in shifts of consumer sentiment and demand is an absolute game changer for the insurance industry. And I mean, you cited your grandfather. I'll cite my own 16-year-old daughter. I would guess when you just turned 16, and I would guess when each one of us turned 16, one of the first things we did was run down to the DMV to get our driver's licenses.
Absolutely.
and I will tell you, we're dealing with a generation where she has no interest in getting her driver's license because she doesn't really ever see owning or operating, you know, a vehicle on a day-to-day basis,
right,
much in
yeah.
the way we do. And, yeah. you know, we're seeing that already play out throughout our industry as consumers really are changing how they interact with even the concept of ownership of homes and cars. You know, the sharing economy is, of course, having a major impact. So it's causing us as a community of insurance regulators to really look at some fundamental questions about what does insurance look like going forward in this new world, and how do we regulate it in many cases using laws that mm-hmm. were, you know, written back
right.
in the 1800s,
right.
Where you had people who were doing door-to-door sales of insurance. But Back to sort of the area of health, we're seeing those same impacts of innovation there as well. But data security has been a big issue. And, you know, you have to look no further than some of the front page reports on the data breaches we're seeing in some health insurers. Mm-hmm. And that's really because they are a prime target for breaches, for cyber threats. You know, insurance records, health records are a veritable gold mine mm-hmm. for hacking, and we need to be very sensitized to that. So the NAIC is really focusing on the safety and soundness when it comes to cybersecurity. We've moved forward with adopting some principles in that area and directing insurers, producers, and other regulated entities to join forces in identifying risk and adopting practical solutions to protect insurance information that's entrusted to them. I think consumers are expecting insurers to do that. We're going to hold them to that and move forward with a model law that we hope will further codify some of those principles. In the same time, there's a demand for cyber insurance coverage, but that also is sort of an innovative new product, and we're focused on making sure that the insurers who are writing that cyber insurance really understand the risk that they're writing. So it's an exciting sort of area within the insurance industry, a total game changer for all of us.
You know, Mike, I was thinking, as you were saying, that the insurance commissioners, regulators are really beat cops protecting their neighborhoods. I really like that concept. And, you know, just walk us through the NAIC. You guys cover a lot. Maybe just tell our listeners a little more about that role that insurance commissioners are involved in. You guys really have your hand in all sorts of activities.
We do, Mark, and I spend a lot of time also trying to convince my kids that, you know, my job is actually pretty cool because it deals with things like cyber security. It deals with major policy issues of the day like health insurance and financial services reforms, issues like terrorism coverage, climate change. All of that is a big part and the everyday experience of state insurance regulators. So part of what we do at the NAIC is work very hard to raise the visibility of the important work that our members are doing for things that everyday Americans are dealing with. For example, you know, Hurricane Harvey, the departments that are involved in those states have a ton of resources to help consumers recover. For people who are grappling with purchase any kind of insurance coverage, terrific resources exist at the state level. So we're going to be out, for example, later this fall with Stanford University holding a joint conference on cybersecurity risks, meeting with the Silicon Valley players that are having an impact on our industry. So it's an exciting time to be an insurance regulator, and for us supporting them, it's equally exciting.
Well, speaking of trends, the trend toward the mega mergers of the large carriers is something we've been keeping an eye on. And we're seeing the emergence of new types of companies like Oscar Health and Athena Health, who really are setting out to disrupt the status quo. So look to that future. What kind of trends do you see emerging that might serve to alleviate the ever rising costs of health insurance and, you know, the rising cost of healthcare, period? What will be most disruptive to the industry?
I definitely see, you know, some of these emerging outside our traditional insurance segment coming in and having an impact because in many ways I think those companies are sensitized and responding to these consumer shifts that we're talking about in terms of how people are buying insurance. We consistently hear that consumers really want a simplified, streamlined process for purchasing anything, you know, travel, health insurance, what have you. You know, part of what I know our members are struggling with is they absolutely want to create an environment that is conducive to innovation and sort of these out-of-box ideas. But at the same time, you know, everybody's got to be held to the same standard. This is a regulated industry. You know, just because you are a cool Silicon Valley company doesn't necessarily right. excuse you from complying with all right. of the same rules of the road that apply to traditional insurers. And really for us as regulators, making sure that we're up to the task, creating a regulatory environment and structure that is really evolving right along with that marketplace. You know, I would say the pace of change and innovation is unlike anything we've any of us have experienced before, and that's something that is going to keep us on our toes.
We've been speaking today with Mike Considine, CEO of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. You can learn more about their work by going to NAIC.org, or you can follow them on Twitter at NAIC_news. Mike, thank you so much for joining us in Conversations on Healthcare and for the great work that you do.
Mark, Margaret, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
President Donald Trump said that Congress had been just one vote short of repealing the Affordable Care Act. That's not the case. The president, at a campaign rally in Arizona in August, told his supporters, "We were just one vote away from victory after 7 years of everybody proclaiming repeal and replace." Senate Republicans fell one vote short of passing a bill that was seen as a placeholder, the so-called skinny repeal option, which could have then enabled the Senate and House to work on a final bill in a conference committee. Republicans were one vote away from continuing the process. They weren't one vote away from repealing the ACA or Obamacare, as Trump claimed. The Senate had failed to pass its more comprehensive effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The skinny legislation would have changes, including repealing the individual and employer mandates to buy or provide health insurance and delaying a medical device tax. Senator Lindsey Graham was joined by three other Republican senators at a press conference hours before the Senate voted. Graham said, quote, "We've been asked by our leadership for days now to vote on the least common denominator, the skinny bill, because the pitch is if you vote for the skinny bill, then we go to conference." Graham said he and others were concerned that the House would simply take the skinny bill to the floor, pass it, and send it to the president's desk. Graham did vote for the skinny bill, but three Republican senators opposed it: Senators Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and John McCain. One more Republican yes vote would have created a tie, which Vice President Mike Pence could have broken. But again, that would not have repealed the ACA. Instead, it would have continued the process of Republicans in Congress trying to agree on a repeal and replace bill. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Soaring prescription drug prices have been taking a toll on American health consumers, but until now, most didn't understand how those prices were set. Many Americans have resorted to purchasing prescriptions online, often illegally or overseas. While cheaper, these solutions come with their own risk. So an enterprising pair of brothers have created their own solution. Matthew and Jeffrey Chaikin founded Blink Health, a free online destination that links patients with prescription sources that can be up to 90% cheaper than what's found on the traditional market.
The way it works is you go to blinkhealth.com, you look up the name of your medication, the price you see there is the price you get at over 60,000 pharmacies nationwide. If that price is less than what you normally pay for your prescription, you pay for it online. We provide you with what we call a digital Blink pharmacy card. You show that card to the pharmacist, they type in the codes on that card, and your medication rings up as $0.
Co-founder Jeffrey Chaikin to CBS News recently, they negotiated prices directly with drug manufacturers.
We actually have contracts with every single pharmacy in the United States. So what the nature of the contract is that they accept our prices. What's important for consumers is that when they go to Blink, there's one price that they're going to see. They'll get that price no matter which pharmacy they go to.
Customers can purchase the drugs online, but still pick them up at their trusted local pharmacy. Since Blink launched last year, users have saved millions of dollars on prescriptions, and a majority of those prescriptions are filled for $10 or less. At a time when not only drug prices are going up, but co-pays and out-of-pocket costs are rising dramatically as well.
Blink, an online site for purchasing prescription drugs, to safely fill prescriptions at a far more competitive price, allowing them to stay healthy and save significant money at the same time. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.